Hello and welcome to the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life podcast. My name is probabilistically Marcus Freestone. Now, I promised a couple of episodes ago that I would share a recent revelation I had, so that's what I'm about to do. I just want to preface it by saying that this is the last time I intend to go into anything personal or autobiographical in such detail. I've done it a lot in the book and the podcasts, and I think I've wrung everything I possibly can out of my own life in terms of useful examples for listeners and readers. I'm not saying that I won't ever be using any personal examples, rather that I am now going to focus on covering more general subject matter rather than my own experiences. However, if any of you have any relevant examples from your own lives, then please feel free to share them with me by email or Facebook message. I've had messages from people saying that they like the podcast or have found it useful, but nobody has yet suggested any topic they would like me to cover or offered to share their own experiences. Please do, because I don't want this podcast to be about me, and I'm finding it increasingly hard to think of topics that aren't directly related to my own life. So, on that bombshell, we shall proceed. There is a natural tendency to compare ourselves to others, and I have a recent example from my own life that perfectly illustrates this. I share this at some length because I need you to know the details in order to understand the complete volte-face I have undergone and how much of my previous negativity I have managed to shed. A few months ago I began a teaching course. As soon as I arrived in the room, I immediately got on a negative path and made myself feel inadequate and worthless. I thought, all these people have decent jobs, they're doing what they've always wanted to do, they all have cars and settled lives, and in comparison, I'm a total failure and I don't deserve to be here. I felt like a piece of shit, and I was sure that everyone in the room was also judging me as such. When I got home, I spent a few days analysing this experience, and thankfully it proved well worthwhile. Here are some things that I wrote during those days. I feel worthless, so I don't shower often enough or do the washing up, and have often deliberately sabotaged myself because I think that I deserve to be a failure. I feel inferior to almost everyone I meet, anyone with a proper job or a car or more money than me. I've never owned a car. And I keep up a daily internal monologue where I'm constantly telling imaginary people about how hard done by I am and how unfair life has been to me. Why do I keep doing this? I'm already trying to think of scenarios where I failed a teaching course and can't get a decent job because I feel that I deserve to remain poor and a failure. I must come up with the correct change of attitude to stop this rubbish once and for all, or one day soon I will find the energy to kill myself. I then did some reading and listened to some podcasts. For some reason, I thought that abandonment may be the key to my problems. Luckily, it turned out that I was right. The remainder of this section consists of my further writings after these studies. I'm constantly reenacting my childhood abandonment. I'm projecting it onto publishers, the BBC, my friends for not buying my books or listening to my music. Indeed, the whole world. I've also realised that my anger and resentment is coming from my mother, not my father or stepfather. My sense of failure and worthlessness comes from her recent attitude and comments, and my other issues are from the ages of 6 and 7. I am keeping myself poor and unsuccessful and behaving negatively to put people off so that they reject me, because somehow it is comforting to repeat the same patterns. Looking back, the constant breaking up of my last relationship comes from that. I wanted it to be destroyed because that was what I felt I deserved. Also, by ruining or ending a relationship or job opportunity, I am gaining a sense of control. When things go well, it feels unfamiliar and scary. And when things start to go wrong, it feels like that's what should be happening to me. That's what I deserve. Okay, I've let go of everything to do with my father because so much time has passed. I hardly ever get angry at anything my stepfather did because he's long dead and was never in a position to criticise me anyway because he was a horrible person in all respects. I've dismissed all that as irrelevant. So why am I still holding on to my mother's negativity and letting it ruin my life? It's been several years since I've had any contact with her, and I'm now 43. Apart from a couple of things that are well on the way to happening, I've achieved all my creative ambitions. So what is the problem? The only problem, as usual, is my negative attitude towards myself, and that is totally within my control, as is saying negative things in public and alienating myself from people. If some of this seems to contradict the positive things I've said in the last couple of episodes, that's because I wrote what I'm reading now a few months ago. It's about 4 or 5 months ago when I did this course, and it's just taken me till now to sort of process it all. So the last sort of little batch of podcasts and the new stuff in the book is all this new, much healthier, more positive attitude that I have, which comes from the work that I'm talking about now. Denial comes from shame. What am I denying or ashamed of? I suppose it's the life I've ended up with, i.e. the way I've self-sabotaged and wasted opportunities and run away from life. And I'm ashamed of indulging in my negativity and blaming my past. Really, I'm blaming my parents, which at 43 is pathetic. I've been in denial of the fact that I blame and resent my parents, and I tell people this is an excuse to remain negative and remain in my failure. I've told myself that it's the lack of a well-paid creative career that I resent, but really, it's that I'm stuck in emotional childhood reactions. It's that I feel abandoned and unloved. I'm ashamed of feeling that I'm above doing a shitty minimum wage job and that I deserve my dream life. But most people wouldn't work if they didn't need the money and don't think much of the crappy jobs they have to do. Does this shame come from my mother? She thought my father was useless because he never held down a well-paid job, and therefore she also thought that I was useless and the same as him because she didn't have the brains to see past my domestic circumstances and appreciate that I was writing books and making headway in non-traditional directions. I think it's also that neither of my parents ever said they were proud of me, so I'm seeking audience approval to make up for it. I've internalised my early abandonment and am now self-abandoning by keeping myself lonely, poor and unhappy. And I suppose my suicidal impulses are the ultimate form of self-abandonment. I need to draw a flowchart of all the triggers in my life and analyse it in a scientific manner in order to break the cycle. I also need to act and behave the age I am now. That last sentence is something I read in a book, and I know it sounds a bit kind of hippie-ish and self-helpy, which I very much don't want these podcasts to be, but I think that's a crucial part of this. Yes, it may sound strange to younger listeners, but I don't really feel any different than when I was 18, and I'm nearly 44 now. But I don't feel like an adult a lot of the time. I don't feel middle-aged. I don't know what that's supposed to feel like. But I need to act and behave like a grown-up and not like a spoilt, abandoned child. That's the point. I also need to let go emotionally of my abandoners. I've cut them out of my life, but I'm still emotionally tied because on some level I'm trying to change their attitude, the attitude of my parents. Also, I can't let go because it's my only excuse for my failures. And also, if I forgive my abandoners, then I'm letting them off, and that means it wasn't really their fault, and then all the responsibility for my life comes back onto me. It's amazing to read this now that this is about 3 or 4 months after I've worked through this and shed all this from my life, but I realise I've spent, you know, into my 40s just thinking like this, and that all this negativity comes from this, you know, really quite petty stuff that my parents said and did or didn't say and do 35, 40 years ago. But I can't be the only one who, you know, thinks and behaves like this in adult life. And as with all the other stuff I talk about in these podcasts and the book, you have to realise that you're in this negative cycle in order to get out of it. In fact, often just realizing and acknowledging it is all you have to do. As soon as I wrote the stuff that I'm reading out to you now, it all just lifted. It was like, forgive the cliche, but the clouds parting, and I just thought, wow, is this all that's been holding me back? And it turned out it was, and now my life's moved on a lot in the last few months. And I now feel like a proper adult and that I deserve to have a decent job and to have a successful writing career and all this. And it's all well on the way to happening now because I'm behaving in such a way to make it happen. I believe it's going to happen because I haven't got all this crap holding me back. It seems far too Freudian for me, but I think it's probably true. All this trying to prove to the world that I'm a good writer and wanting them to pay attention, it's all been about seeking my mother's approval. Because part of me is emotionally stuck at age 6 or 7, I'm still trying to win her praise. Wow, another thing to let go of. As I said, I have let go of all this and it's made a huge difference to my life. And the reason this particularly doesn't make sense is because I haven't seen or spoken to my father for 25 years. My stepfather's long dead. I haven't seen or spoken to my mother for several years. So why is it? Obviously makes no logical sense to try and change their attitude, because anything that I achieve from now on, they will have no idea of it. They won't know about it. So it's nonsensical. As soon as I realised that, I thought, okay, I can let go of all that, move on. And I have. So just the final section now of these bit that I wrote after these studies. The inner child is the abandoned one, and the outer child is the one that self-sabotages our adult life. Abandonment feelings are easily triggered, leading to self-doubt and an unconscious reaction of self-abandonment. It also leads to procrastination and avoiding things. The unconscious is hypercritical, e.g. it takes a tiny negative from a friend and produces a huge trigger reaction. Something I've had a big problem with until recently. I also have a problem with being addicted to abandonment and avoiding successful relationships. There's also a need to feel insecure and a fear of engulfment that leads to isolation and avoiding people and especially relationships. I destroy relationships and situations and opportunities before they can reject me. The outer child looks for external solutions to internal problems, e.g. me trying to solve abandonment with creative approbation. We also constantly reenact our early abandonment in our current relationships. And I wrote finally, I definitely keep doing this in big, bold, underlined letters. But thankfully, like everything else here, I've stopped doing that now. and life is so much better. So, what can we learn from this? Well, I think an important factor in this, as I've said concerning other things in the book and in other episodes of the podcast, that as with other things, with abandonment, it's not what you think is the source of the feeling, of the emotion, probably isn't. So, for example, in recent years, in my recent relationship, I have had feelings about the relationship that weren't actually... They were triggered by things my girlfriend may have said or done, or things I perceived her, you know, what I interpreted as her having, you know, some criticism of me. But actually, she wasn't the problem. The problem was things, a trivial thing she would say, such as, oh, you haven't washed up that plate properly, would just send me into ridiculous paroxysms of sort of anger and frustration and feeling so hurt and rejected. But of course, logically, that's an incredibly small criticism. It's mildly, it's no more than mildly irritating to be told by someone that you haven't washed a plate properly. You might sort of go, oh, all right, give it here, I'll do it again. And, it, you know, you might be a bit pissed off for a few minutes, but it's, you know, things, trivial things like that in recent years would just make me go apoplectic with anger. And sometimes it would make me feel so, I would feel so criticised and abandoned and rejected. I would actually think, right, that's it, I've got to go home and kill myself now. I mean, it was that absurd. That's how powerful childhood feelings of abandonment and rejection and criticism can make you feel in your adult life, even if, as in my case, we're talking 35, 40 years down the line. If you don't work on this stuff, it never leaves you. So what you have to do, and it took me a ridiculously long time to do this, and you can save yourselves, if you're younger than me, you can save a lot of hassle in your adult life by doing this a lot bloody earlier than I did. What you have to do is, if you get ridiculously angry or hurt about something trivial, think, okay, what is the emotion that I'm actually feeling? And when I analysed it, the emotions and anger I was feeling at something my girlfriend said to me were actually, what I was feeling was nothing to do with what she'd said. And it was, if I analysed that with a clear head, then it was very clear that it was nothing to do with what she said. But in the random way that the brain works, triggers are not logical. You know, people with PTSD, people who've been in a war, can be triggered by the sound of a car backfiring. Now, they know logically, you know, walking down the average high street, that it's almost certainly not going to be an explosion, but they might be triggered anyway, because the brain often works in a sort of metaphorical associative way. And that's just, don't know why it does this, but it's just one of the ways that consciousness has randomly evolved, that our brains work like this. So there's often little or no connection between the trigger and the emotion you feel. So what you have to do is, well, initially, in fact, this may be something I could do in a future podcast, you have to sort of work on, as I have done, I mean, you can't, as I said in the last episode or the one before that, that you can't completely control your reaction to something, the instantaneous emotional visceral reaction. You can't control that, but then what you can do is, after a second or two has passed, you can sort of take a deep breath, go, okay, I don't need to get angry or stressed about this. This is nothing. And the emotion I'm feeling is not about this current situation. It's triggering something from my past. And what you need to do is delve into your past and, as I have done, and say, okay, all my feelings of rejection and inferiority and worthlessness and basically the bulk of my depression and anxiety over 20, 30 years has been because of a few relatively small things in my childhood. But the point is, as we've said before, that emotions are not logical. In fact, next week, I think I'm going to talk about Gurdjieff and Ouspensky. I'll do a briefing here. Gurdjieff was a 19th and early 20th century Russian mystic philosopher. He was also a doctor. And he came up with this, with these ideas about the human brain and body that have been pretty influential, and some are reflected even in mainstream psychology. But the thing I'll just briefly mention here, because it's relevant to what I've just said, is that he had this idea that, and again, this he used different words, but you can find this in psychology textbooks now, that Gurdjieff said that human beings are divided into three. He called them centers, which is a bit kind of hippie-ish, but there you go. He said that we have a moving center, a thinking center, and a feeling center. So basically, in modern psychological terms, we're divided as human beings into emotions, cognitive or intellectual functions, and motor functions. And Gurdjieff said that a lot of human problems are to do with using the wrong center for a type of work. So, for example, I'm sure you'll know how difficult it is to solve an emotional problem intellectually or vice versa. So, you know, if you're having an emotional experience, you need to be using the emotional part of your brain, of yourself, in order to deal with that. And only in the aftermath, when you've stopped having that emotional reaction, can you intellectually analyze it. So when you are triggered and when you realize that you are having an absurd emotional overreaction to something, you need to wait until you've properly calmed down. And I've talked before in the book about the fact that once you have stress hormones like cortisol going through your body, it takes half an hour for the chemicals to get back to normal levels. So if you're stressed out, you're in an argument and you leave the room, if you go back in within half an hour and the argument starts again, those stress chemicals will immediately go back up to maximum again. So you need at least half an hour away from the situation to properly calm down. Although obviously that's, you know, not always practical if you're in work or you live with someone or something. But once you've properly calmed down, you need to analyse the emotional reaction to this false trigger, analyse it intellectually and cognitively and say, okay, that thing that happened there, what were the emotions that it made me feel? And analyse those emotions and think, and clearly this is not going to be a one-off. You will be feeling these emotions a lot. So you then have to think, why am I feeling these? And you may well find, as me, it's something as simple as feeling abandoned or rejected in childhood. You know, if you look at the psychology literature, you can find a lot of this stuff. And I'm beginning to ramble now. So I think we'll end the episode there. And next week I'll either do Gurdjieff and Ouspensky, and maybe Colin Wilson as well, who I've mentioned in the book. Or I was going to talk about finding meaning in life when there isn't a sort of prescribed meaning from above. So I hope this episode edits together into some kind of coherent sense. Hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. Go to marcusfreestone.com. You could be nice to me by buying my books or music or just liking this on iTunes or wherever you found it. And I'll speak to you soon. Bye.